Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Fish Bites, the Miami Herald's Miami Marlins podcast. I'm Jordan McPherson. He's Andre Fernandez, and it's spring training. Pitchers and catchers have been going on for the last couple of days. We get the first full squad workout on Tuesday, and it's just the latest final step to baseball being back. Andre, where's your excitement level at right now, man?
My excitement level is great. And on an off note, the fact that a certain team traveled up the road and became the number one ranked college baseball team in the country had to remind you there, Mr. Gator. Something interesting happened up in Gainesville this weekend before we get into pro baseball.
Yeah, something did happen. Those UM Canes went up, took 2 of 3 against the Gators. But also, it's the first time since, I think I have to go back to, I think it, what was it, 2014 was the last time that UM won a series against the Gators?
It's been a very long time, yeah. But you know, when you're the top dog, and the Gators have been for a long time, you know, there's always a bullseye, and the Canes have been shooting and missing for years now, and they finally got one. It's early. It doesn't matter who's number one now. It matters later in Omaha, but it was good to see that series is competitive again.
No, seriously, yeah. Like you said, it's 3 of 56, but I'm really happy. I like what I've been seeing from Gino DeMari since he took over for Jim Morris, and he's really got a really good grip on that program, and it's exciting to see what they can do, but again, yeah. I'm expecting the Gators to bounce back once things go on. But on that note,
with the pro team, let's go. Major League Baseball now.
We've got Major League Baseball. We've got spring training. We've gone through, what is it, 5 days now? Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. 6 days. I had to actually count there.
Yeah, so I don't even know anymore. We're probably at the point where, like, you ask Don Mattingly, he doesn't know what day of the week it is anymore.
I already did. I told him on Sunday. I was like, good morning, Donnie. Happy Sunday. He went, it's Sunday? Really? Already?
Exactly.
But
for a manager, it must be a real blur. Every year, the same routine, and you just get lost in the days.
Yeah, but here we are. The first full squad workout is on Tuesday. As a quick programming disclaimer here, Andre and I are recording this Monday afternoon before we actually get up to Jupiter, before we get to see everything in person. But we still have a lot to talk about after what we've seen, or at least what we've heard through these first 6 days. We've gotten to talk with just about everybody from that new revamp bullpen. We've talked with the bulk of the guys who are going to be in the rotation. We got a lot of really good insight from Jorge Alfaro about his progress. Just Dre, just as we get going and full squad starts up and spring games start up this weekend, just what's your overall assessment of the atmosphere around this team and just the mood as things get started up?
I mean, I think it's a mood where I think they're excited to see how much of an effect last year had on this team. Because as we know, you know, no one expected them to do what they did. And, you know, you can debate the validity of it with the short season. But like Don said, the impact of having a playoff season, especially for the younger players, you know, for the core guys that are coming back that have been there a while, just to taste that was big. I mean, you know, that's going to help whether this team gets back or not, or if it's just a progression year of development and so on and so forth. So I think there's a little bit of that also with, you know, the curiosity of, you know, this is kind of where we still were last year. We wanted to know how good some of these prospects are going to be. The pandemic didn't allow for that really to get a good, really good look. I think we're excited to see a lot of guys, how they're going to go up against other competition, not, you know, so much of this, you know, intra-squad and facing the same hitters over and over. I think guys are itching to get out there and face other teams and really test themselves. And I think even from an evaluation standpoint, you want to start to finally see some of those steps taken over the next few weeks.
And a lot of the players themselves have mentioned that and also noted that, yes, what we did last year was great, but 2021 is a new year. When we got Dan Castano on Monday and just asking him just the whirlwind of the season for him, which, let's face it, if the COVID situation didn't happen last year, we probably would not have seen Daniel Castano in the big leagues in 2020. But instead, he got 7 games, he got 6 starts, and showed that he could be a contender for a swingman type role. And when I asked him about it, his response was, well, when I came into camp, I went to Donnie and went, hey, congratulations on the Manager of the Year award. And Donnie Flyo told him, well, that was last year, this is this year. And right. They're trying to keep that switch flip. Yes, they're understanding and grateful for the playoff run. They know that that's not to be taken lightly, but they also know that they need to follow it up. They need to show that, like you said, it has, what they can do over 162, what this starting rotation, what the group of Sandy and Sixto and Eliezer and Pablo and whoever ends up winning that fifth spot. and what this new bullpen and frankly what the offense will be able to show and be able to take that next step as they go from 60 games to 162. And there are a lot of questions, especially when we look at the NL East, and we've harped on it, I think, every week for going on, it's got to be 4, 5, 6 weeks now, about just how tough this division is and how it's going to be a real litmus test for just how far this team has come as we get into year four of the rebuild.
And Castano, Mr. Underdog, Mr. Afterthought in the trade, Mr. I've never been a prospect, I'm the oldest guy in the room and all that. Guess what? Obviously, he hasn't seen his Baseball America handbook yet. And now he is a prospect ranked in the Marlins system, at least with those guys. Not that I had anything to do with that. But no, but in all seriousness, yeah, he is one of several that has to take the next step. Another guy that I haven't heard mentioned too much yet is Trevor Rogers, who really took a big leap last year, jumped into the rotation for a little while, probably would have still been in the mix had the Marlins gone a little further, you know, to make a potential playoff start. You know, and he's another one. You want to see the jump he has on Monday. We talked to Nick Neidert, you know, with his flowing hair and not getting a haircut and the whole thing. But he's going to have a new look, and it's a really another chance for him to finally, you know, really settle in. We know he made a debut, but really not like a real solid debut in the majors because of what happened with COVID. But this is his chance to finally jump in, and he's been a guy that's been mentioned for 2 years now as a potential rotation piece. So again, a lot of guys that need to build off, you know, last season and really make up for lost time. And it's going to be exciting to see how that process shakes out and a lot of decisions to be made. You hate when I remember a few camps ago when it was like the 25-man roster was pretty much set. All we were waiting on was, you know, the very last spot, and that was it. No, that's a boring camp. I like these kind of camps where there's a lot of intrigue, a lot of, you know, who's going to get this spot, that spot. And I think we're going to see a lot of that as the weeks go by.
And then there is one spot when it comes to that rotation battle that sort of helped sort itself out, unfortunately, from this front with Edward Cabrera. Donnie announced over the weekend that Cabrera is going to be out indefinitely. He had, I believe the exact phrase was, nerve inflammation in his right bicep. That's his throwing hand, that's throwing arm. And it's just, it's unfortunate, because I mean, this is the second year in a row. During last season when he was at the alternate training site, he had a minor shoulder issue that aggravated him. They eased him back in slowly to the point where he didn't make his debut, even though he was part of the taxi squad during the playoff run. But this was supposed to be a year where we really get to see what Edward Cabrera brings to the table. And we know that his stuff is potentially going to be able to rival Sixto's. And the opportunity to potentially see the two of them on top of Sandy at the top end of the rotation was something that a lot of fans and a lot of people, and I'll be honest, me specifically, was hoping to see at some point this year. And now it's looking like we're having another setback on that front.
Yeah, to me, it's the most frustrating thing so far, and hopefully there's not a lot of these to follow. But when you look at Edward, yeah, it's like he's another guy that just we're finally, like, when are we finally going to be able to see this guy out there? I mean, you know, you look at a guy who can throw a fastball pretty much just like Sixto, has very similar makeup in that sense. But, I mean, even has a second pitch, that changeup is pretty devastating, has a good curveball. I mean, his secondary stuff might be, some would argue, might be even better than what Sixto has right now. But yet again, Sixto's the one that's been able to stay healthy, go out there and show it. And we're still waiting on Edward, unfortunately. First, he has he burns his elbow with the thing a couple of years ago. Then he has the other injury. So again, yet another setback. It's like, when are we finally going to be able to get him on the mound and see him in game action? Hopefully it won't take too long for him to get out there. But again, another, you know, sucks to hear that, especially right at the beginning of spring training when he was definitely one of the guys at the top of the list that you were excited to see.
Yeah, and to switch from the pitching side of it to the catching side for a quick second, just talking about guys who we're hoping to see and wanting to see that next step from, Jorge Alfaro, he impressed me a lot more than I thought, and in probably the best way possible when we got to talk to him on Friday. He took the benching, I guess we can adequately describe it, during the playoffs. He took it to heart last year because, I mean, we saw the struggles from last year. He missed the first month after testing positive for COVID and just never got comfortable during the second half of the season when he finally started getting regular playing time, to the point where Chad Wallach started all but one of the Marlins playoff games. And Alfaro, expecting to be the catcher of the present and hopefully the Marlins hope the catcher of the future, he was nowhere to be found. And he basically said that it was a wake-up call, essentially, hey, I need to figure out exactly what I'm doing here. I need to figure out what I'm where I'm getting at, because his opportunity could be fleeting if he doesn't find a way to turn things around. And he really responded to that throughout this offseason.
Yeah, I'm glad he did, because, I mean, when you show up to the dance and then you're left on the bench pretty much, I mean, that's a sign. I mean, that's something that this team was building for, and then he's not – and then at that moment he's not trusted to be that guy. I mean, I would have taken it for sure. I would have taken it like a gut check for him. And it's really it could be a crossroads for his career, like you were saying a minute ago. I mean, this is a guy that they invested a lot in to be the future catcher of the franchise. And if he doesn't step up, I mean, I agree with you. I was impressed by the way that he took it with maturity, and it sounded like he's ready to really be. From the beginning, he's had he's always expressed himself like kind of like that leadership. He's always talking about protecting his pitchers and being invested in doing and really being in sync with them. Being the
bodyguard, yeah.
Being the bodyguard, right. We joke because he didn't know how to say it the first year, but now he does how to say it. And he, you know, that just that makeup of his, I think, like, but he's got to show it on the field. He's got to show it mechanically with his swing. He's got to have better plate discipline. You know, the strikeouts have been way too high, you know, for a long time now. And then you want to see him play with that passion, but you want to see him a little bit also under control, because they need him to stay on the field. I mean, they can't afford to keep having him come out with injuries left and right. You like the aggressiveness, but we've talked about that, how he has to kind of keep that. So all those things, it's a major season for 2021 at the catcher spot for the Marlins, because Will Banfield is another one we've talked about, but Will Banfield is still far, far away from making his major league debut. It's not like if Alfaro doesn't work out, Banfield's ready to go right behind. No. So in the long term, that's one of the most important positions to see how it develops during the spring training and into the season.
Definitely. And before we take our quick break here, I'm going to just let Jorge Alfaro speak for himself. I pulled a couple of sound bites from his 15-minute interview Zoom room session that he had with us back on Friday, just to let him explain what he did during the offseason and just his motivation factor heading into 2021.
I mean, the mentality that I had was just try to get here, ready to compete for a spot, for show that I was working on what I need to work on, get better, improve, and just come here and show that I'm working for that I'm working to get to be the number one catcher here. And that's what I was thinking. Last year, it was hard for me to get, I mean, sitting on the bench at the end of the year. So that was for me for like a wake up call to just start working on what I need to improve. And that was on my mind the whole off season, just to get better. My defense, hitting, everything, even if I had to sacrifice time with the family, my son, and all that. I know to get to be the player that we want to be, we have to make sacrifice, and that was one of the points that I was thinking the whole offseason.
Yeah. Hey, Jorge, great to see you again. On that line, we talked with Donnie this morning, and he said, I have no problem saying Georgie's our guy, that he trusts that you're going to be the number one. How much confidence does that give you, especially considering how the end of last season did unfold for you?
It means a lot. It means a lot for me, because I was working on that. I was working to get better. I was working to improve, how I said it before. Get better in my defense, get better in my hitting, and work hard to get to be the player that I want to be. So that means a lot to me that Donnie says things like that, because he made me feel the hard work is paying off, you know.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, so we've talked starting pitching. We've talked the catching situation. Let's talk some bullpen here, right? I mean, that's basically, we have a lot of names to talk about because the Marlins basically just completely revamped this thing once again, and it went right up to the day of pitchers and catchers reporting. I mean, they got Dylan Floro a couple days beforehand. They traded for John Curtis from the Tampa Bay Rays the day of. John Curtis told us in a really riveting and open-minded 15-minute interview that he got the text 7:30 a.m. on Wednesday, right before he's about to go to Tampa's their spring training site in Port Charlotte to get his physical done. And he said he got a text from their GM going, "Hey, give me a call. Don't come to the field." His response, "Well, I just got traded." To the point where he gets the call, he gets told he's got traded. He packs up his house, the house that he was staying at, starts making the drive down to Jupiter, and then realizes that he has the Marlins organizational meeting, and he ends up having a stop in the he had to stop at a Dunkin' Donuts, hop on their Wi-Fi so he can sit in the meeting before getting down to Jupiter. But again, you're getting a lot of, with guys like John Curtis and guys like Dylan Floro and guys like Adam Simber and even Ross Detweiler, and the list keeps going on and on, the Rule 5 guys that they got. You have a lot of new names, but you have a lot of guys who give you variety in this pen. They give you a lot of different looks, lefty, righty, sidearm, different velos, different ways of doing things. And it gives the Marlins a lot of options, it looks like, this year that they didn't really have last year or the last couple of years for that matter.
Don't you feel better that since, you know, as a reporter, you're not the only one that has to pull over and grab the, and pirate the Wi-Fi signal at a Starbucks or at a Dunkin' Donuts?
Far too many times. Or all this kind of stuff. Football.
Yeah, that's exactly, that was the life in high school when you were covering high school football. But glad to see a Major League Baseball player might, you know, you're on that same level. You know, every, when you have an emergency, grab the Wi-Fi, and that's what happened with him. But yeah, you know, it was a good interview with Curtis, and I think that it's going to be interesting to see how the pieces fit together. I'm like probably everybody else that follows the Marlins, you know, I'm interested to see who lands the closer role. I mean, you know, Anthony Bass has a good, you know, overall, I think a good chance. I mean, if you look at his numbers, the last couple of years, you know, has had, I think it's 12 combined saves between Seattle and Toronto. You know, I like his strikeout to walk ratio there the last couple of years, a little less than when he was with the Cubs. But if he can get those numbers back up, I think he's got a good shot at it. And then, I don't know, I kind of like Yimi in that bridge role, seventh, eighth inning. Maybe he ends up there too. And, you know, and Floro, the experience he's going to bring from the playoffs last year and from, you know, being with the champs, I think that's something interesting that to see how it bolsters it together. But yeah, I mean, completely out the door almost with the bullpen and bringing in, it'll probably be almost a whole new nine, you know, when they take the field in April. So, and extremely important because we obviously talk over and over to death about the rotation, but you know, stabilizing the bullpen is going to make the key difference as to whether this team can overachieve and exceed expectations that they're being given so far.
Yeah, I mean, barring the chance of them potentially carrying like a Nick Niter if he doesn't win the job of carrying him as a long reliever like they did last year, Yimmy's the only guy from the opening day roster who's going to be back in terms of the bullpen. I mean, Richard Bleier and James Hoy came in after the COVID outbreak and really impressed during that.
Yeah, they were the replacement. They were part of the replacements.
Yeah, and a few of the replacements who stuck. So, but between that and also just another thing with Dylan Floro, I just get the vibe of what the Marlins did when they got Yimi, just one of the guys who you know has the potential to be a late inning, high leverage guy. But when you're on the Dodgers and they're as stacked as they are, you don't really get that much of the opportunity. Right. And then you see them come to, space, like the Marlins, where you get that chance. Yimi lived up to it. Even though, yes, he was the bridge guy, the eighth inning for just about everything, except for I think it was one start where Kinsler was dealing with a nail issue and the Marlins wanted to have Yimi at the ninth just to be safe in case something did happen with Kinsler. Yimi faced more or less the top of the order every time he went up there. And even with that, during the regular season, gave up just one run. So we saw him, even though he wasn't the closer per se, he was in, for the most part, generally the tougher parts of the lineup each time he got thrown out there.
I think it was the best reliever they had last year overall. Yeah. If you look at it, and that's the appealing part. I mean, that's why you could at least consider maybe for the closer job. But you again, it's just interesting how it's going to work out. What, you know, kind of what they see from each guy in camp, and kind of what their vision is for, you know, do they feel like he's better as a bridge guy to a guy like Bass at the end, or do they like him as maybe the, you know, having the closer job to shut it down at the very end in the ninth? Can he handle that pressure of, you know, closing in the ninth? Because that's, you talk to any pitcher that's done it, it's a different animal when you get in there and you're the you're trying to get those last three outs.
No, it definitely is. And just the bullpen guys overall, everyone's basically said the same, basically gave the same response that they think they can be sneaky good. So, I mean, it was a lot of smaller moves that basically is getting to the point where the whole is looking like it's going to be greater than the sum of its parts. And that's basically what they're having the bank on, right?
Yeah, they're going to have to. I mean, it's very similar. You hope that, I think I said on during our roundtable, you hope they're as smart as a team like the Rays. You know, when you're making those shrewd moves where, you know, you're making economical shrewd moves to try and get good pieces that are going to each contribute, you know, because obviously you're not going to break the bank like some of the other teams have in the division this offseason. So we're going to see. We're going to see if the analytics, you know, really do, you know, translate into them into wins and into quality appearances for all these guys, and if all the pieces fit together.
Yep. And now with full squad starting up, we're going to start getting to get some position player info in there. Just, Dre, I know we talked about this a little bit on the roundtable, but who's an under-the-radar type guy? And I guess it could be a prospect guy or someone who looks like he's fringe for the roster that you're hoping that you're going to try to focus on primarily throughout this next 5 weeks.
You're talking in terms of position players?
Yeah, position players ideally. And then if you want to throw someone in from the pitcher and catcher side, go feel free to do that as well.
I mean, I'm curious to see. I mean, I definitely want to see, I don't know how much he's under the radar, but, you know, there's some talk of John Birdie maybe ending up somewhere in that second baseman mix. And obviously that's because, you know, the big battle is going to be between Jazz and Eason. But I'm going to say Eason too, because I think there's a lot that we need to know in terms of, you know, he missed pretty much the whole season last year. So long-term decision has to be made there. We have to find out if he can actually handle this. I mean, there's some doubts as to whether he can right now. So I think that's definitely one. I mean, on the pitcher side, I'm curious to see how the rotation shakes out because, and I mentioned Neidert earlier, you know, I think this is his chance. I mean, I saw Christina has him in her top five right now, kind of like an early spring projection to make the rotation. And I thought that was interesting. I mean, you look at it, he's been knocking on the door the last couple of years and something keeps happening, you know, that keeps him out of it. So is he going to seize that opportunity and finally get in there? But I want to know too, now that I'm kind of going through the names, I want to see more of Braxton Garrett.
Me too.
Because so much was made out of him and you know, a first-round pick a few years ago. And, you know, he comes up and honestly does not have a good outing at all. His velo is a little bit down, you know, so kind of got overshadowed by the way Rodgers pitched. So this has to be a bounce-back year for Garrett in terms of really, you know, progressing again and developing. And is he still on track? I think, you know, a lefty guy like him, I think there's a lot of potential, still a lot of upside still there. But let's see if he can, you know, continue to develop and if he can still be a part of this long-term mix in terms of future starters.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to echo you with second base. Just seeing how that unfolds is going to tell us a lot about where the Marlins are right now, because their ultimate plan long-term is Eason at second, Jazz at short, and then have Lewin Diaz and Brian Anderson on the corners. If neither of Jazz or Eason really impress this spring, that's going to be a red flag. Because, I mean, as much as we love John Birdie and love seeing what he's able to bring to the table in terms of the speed, the basically guaranteed leadoff guy.
This isn't Birdie for the next 5 or 6 years.
Exactly. Yep. He is more suited for that utility role, that spot start. Have him basically be the role that Miguel Rojas was a few years back where, oh, you need a day off at second base, you need a day off at third, you need a day off at shortstop. Okay, John, go, Birdie, go in there. Fill that spot for the day. But in the same vein, I would not be surprised if we end up potentially early on seeing a platoon situation there between whoever wins between Eason and Jazz and Birdie for righties versus lefties. I would not be surprised if they go that route at the very least early to make sure that the guys are slowly starting to, whoever they do between Jazz or Eason, starts to feel comfortable before giving them the role full time.
And obviously Jazz, we say the red flag, meaning it's even more so as a hitter, mm-hmm. because we know Jazz, obviously probably the long term is he could still move to shortstop, and we've seen the glove, and the glove's amazing and all of that, but it's mostly at the plate.
Correct.
And would the way he performs is that alarming, where he's not hitting at all and he's not progressing, but you know, reports out of from them and from scouts is that the upside is there, the potential is there for him to keep building off of that. But again, this is going to be obviously a crucial year to see if it all comes together and if he can be a little more consistent in those areas in terms of the bat to ball skills and cutting down on the strikeouts.
Yeah, and then just a couple other guys who I'm trying to look at, and it's more so on the prospect side, just because we lost the season last year. We didn't get a real chance to evaluate a lot of their guys who aren't here yet, but by the end of 2021 and hopefully by the start of 2022, that should start turning some heads. Like Jose Devers, for example, we got to see a little bit of him during the playoff run when the taxi squad did some live BP. But I want to see where the next step is for him, especially for him being down the road. And really, I want to see the second
group. Needs to stay healthy.
Yeah.
Another guy that needs to stay healthy.
Definitely true. And then the second wave of outfielder. I mean, we're going to talk about JJ Bleday and then Monty Harrison and Brinson and seeing where they go in the immediate. But
don't forget Burdick Mania.
That was actually, he's part of that wave that I'm talking about between Burdick, between Cam Meisner, between Gerard Encarnacion.
Yeah.
Between Connor Scott, who is started getting lost in the wayside there as they start getting more guys in there, seeing who steps up in that wave. And got to throw the Mesa brothers in there too. Cause I mean, we're going to, what is this, year three now with them?
Yeah.
So
year three. And Victor's been trending downward in some cases, but you know, they like the defensive upside there with him still. And Junior's been trending upward on the contrary, I think, you know, especially from the left side of the plate. So yeah, you can't count that out, at least in terms of seeing, you know, what kind of roles. But again, those are guys, real quick, when you look at Victor, when you look at Monte, they're getting up there in age right now when it comes to being a prospect. So the clock is ticking and you have to start seeing more results.
Yeah. And then just on the pitching side, I'm just going to throw, I want to see how Sixto takes what he's able to take away from year one and translate into a full year in 2021. I mean, we saw the flashes, we saw just how electric he can be, but we also saw that he needs to learn how to adapt to teams who have faced him before. So if he's able to adjust to that and really start honing in on his preparation in the 4 days between starts, it's going to be incredible to watch. But if he still has that adjustment period, how long is it going to take for him to finally start getting ready on that front?
Yeah. And a lot of that, like, you know, like the cliche says, between the ears. And I think, you know, he's given me the impression that, you know, he does have that maturity, but I think he has to really prove it to people and show it this year that he can pick that up and he can continue to evolve as we know he's got the tools physically, but he has to evolve in terms of, can he be that steady, you know, mentally, can he be that steady pitcher both on the mound and on those days in terms of sticking to your routine and doing all the little things that you need to do.
All right. And before we wrap up the show today, Dre, I know you specifically want to talk about this guy, so I figured we might as well save him for last. Max Meyer, Marlins 2020 first round pick. We're finally going to get our first in-person look at him this spring. And when he talked, I believe we got him on Thursday. It was Saturday that we got him. He's very mature for his age, I guess, would be the quick synopsis of what I was able to take away from one of our few interactions that we've gotten with him so far. And Dre, just want your insights on what you think of him.
Yeah. I mean, the interviews are getting a little blurry now after a few days, they're blurring together, but that does stand out. That still sticks in my mind. The fact that, you know, the way he answered every question, I mean, you can have some fun, but at the same time, you could tell there's a little bit of that like serious undercurrent where he is ready to go. And he is taking every little step of this process, you know, to heart, and he wants to really prove himself. And I think you're going to see that translate in the work he's going to do this spring. I mean, here's a guy that, you know, a little bit more, and you're getting a little ahead of ourselves if we were saying this season because of the pandemic. But had the pandemic not happened, who knows if we would have been saying maybe later this year that we might have had a chance at least to maybe see Max. But I think going in this year is big on that side, and then maybe going into 2022 for him. And, you know, the tools are there. Again, fastball, you know, velo, very similar to the top guys like Sixto and Edward. But again, that slider, I keep hearing from every scout I've talked to, from everybody in the Marlins organization, pretty filthy. And if, you know, it's just a matter of, again, getting him on the field, getting him into games against other teams, and then seeing how that works, and then just building from there. I think, again, it's like we keep repeating it to death, but it's like for a lot of these guys, what happened last year is just a matter of finally getting out there and finally, you know, pitching and hitting against other teams and that unpredictability, and then seeing how that plays out.
Yeah, definitely. After we got him in the group setting on Saturday, I actually got a chance to talk with Max off to the side for a few minutes. So I'm just going to let that interview roll so you guys can hear from Max Meyer himself about what he's been doing, just the whirlwind that was his 8-9 months from between being drafted to now finally being a couple months away from his pro debut, and just what he's hoping to work on as he goes through spring training now and then finally getting his debut in the minor leagues.
Yeah, so I wanted to get to talk a little bit more in depth outside of the group setting. Just first off, do you sometimes have to take a step back and realize that, holy crap, I'm in spring training right now, I'm taking that first step closer to that ultimate goal?
You know, I never really think like that, honestly. It is crazy, though, to think, you know, how much it's changed in 1 year. Like, I was in college before, you know, living with four guys, and, you know, in big league spring training camp. So it's crazy at times, but I never really think about that. I just, you know, it's every day is a new day, so I'm just ready to go whenever someone tells me.
Yeah, and when spring games do start, what do you feel like that moment's going to be like when you get to step on the mound for your first game as a professional and knowing, again, that you're going to get to start checking off some of these milestones in a few days?
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how I'll feel. I know that, you know, I'm kind of a guy that just, it's another day, it's another game. So, you know, I'm always 100% whenever I'm on the mound, so nothing really changes, and I don't let, you know, big moments get the best of me or anything. So I'm just going to keep playing, you know, the game I've played my whole life.
You have your mound music figured out at least?
I don't know. We're going to see what happens there. Might get a new song.
Yeah. What did you have in college?
I did The Stroke by Billy Squire.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I know it's early in camp, but what has been your impression of working with Mel Stottmeyer Jr. as a pitching coach? Obviously, he's gotten a lot of positive reviews from the guys who have been here for the last couple of years. What have been your thoughts of working with him, even though it's only been a few days?
Yeah, it's been just a start, and, you know, these guys have a lot of information. All these coaches, they're going to help everyone out, and, you know, they're here for us, so they really care about all our careers, and, you know, I can't wait to talk to him more and ask him, you know, every question that I need, because I know he'll be there to help me.
Yeah, and you mentioned in the group setting, you're refining your fastball grip, you're trying to work on the changeup. Everybody's been raving about your slider as one of your top pitches and potentially could be one of the best sliders in baseball over time. I'm just curious, how did that pitch develop, and over time, how did you see that pitch evolve?
I'm a big, like, feel guy when it comes to pitches, and, you know, I've had a couple different grips, but right when I went to the spike grip, I think my sophomore year of college, it really started taking off, and my velo has always been hard on that, but once I, you know, got in the weight room more too, you know, that velocity went up to around 90 miles an hour, and, you know, I still had that depth and break to it, so it's been just feel over time, and I've always, you know, had a good feel to spin the ball, so, you know, it's been my go-to pitch for a while, so. Yeah.
Yeah. And you mentioned in Minnesota, obviously, the weather is pretty cold up there. Obviously, you're happy to be down here in the 60s and 70s. When were you able to start throwing off a mound again, or when did you start throwing off a mound to start getting ready for ramping up for spring?
I'm not sure the specific day, but I have this little wood mound that my dad made for me, and we have this little batting cage in our garage, so we've been throwing against that thing, and I've probably got, I don't know, 6 or 7 pens in before I came here. But, you know, it's definitely harder to find some space to throw in Minnesota when it's, you know, minus 20 out there and you can't get outside on the real mounds and throw.
Yeah, and then I want to backtrack just a little bit just to get your foundation from baseball. When did baseball begin in earnest for you, and when did you start realizing that it was going to be a long-term thing and that you'd be able to hopefully, potentially have this as a long-term career?
Honestly, I feel like the day I got drafted, that's when I figured out that it could be a long time, because I never really thought about the draft and all that stuff. You know, I was just playing baseball to have fun. Obviously, I saw some of, like, the reports going out, but, you know, you're young and I'm still young, and it's like, is that really going to happen? But, you know, once I got drafted, then it was, I started to realize that.
Yeah, and I know you played hockey. You played football, too, early on, right?
Really young.
Yeah. Yeah, but just that multi-sport athlete, being able to play year-round, how much did that keep you fresh and keep you ready for baseball season?
It's always good for all these young kids to play sports growing up. You know, I feel like every kid should play a couple sports, because it, you know, keeps his mind off other things, and you meet new friends and from both sports. It was fun.
Yeah, and then in college, you had two summers with the Team USA college team. How much did that help you with your development and help you get ready for first your junior year in Minnesota, which obviously was cut short, and then ultimately getting ready for the next level?
Yeah, USA was fun, you know, just being surrounded by all these really good players. I met a lot of friends and a lot of great memories that I'll have on that team. So, you know, I don't take baseball too seriously, so it's always fun to just go out there, new teams, meet new guys, and have some fun.
Yeah, and as a hockey guy from Minnesota, are you keeping up with your new hometown team?
I haven't been keeping up with it as much as I'd like, but I'm for sure going to check Panthers out here soon.
Yeah. They're first place in the NHL right now, man.
All that.
Yeah. And then just on away from the baseball field, what's a typical off day like for you? What are some of your hobbies? What do you like to do away from the field?
I like to golf, and I like to fish a lot too, so, you know, I'll have to ease into it a little bit so I don't get absolutely fried, because I got some pretty fair skin right now, but I'd love to golf every day and fish if I could.
How is your golf game, if I can ask?
it's pretty solid. You know, I get a lot of good bounces that the people playing against me, you know, are like, how's this guy so lucky? But, you know, I'm pretty good, shoot about mid-80s.
All right, and then just lastly, to go back to baseball, just your ultimate goal for this year, if you could peg one or two things that if you do this and this right, it'll be a good first year for you, what would you point to?
I'll have to think about some good little goals, but obviously every year, you know, everyone wants to make it to the big leagues and, you know, help their team win, so that's always going to be the main goal.
And on that note, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Fish Bites. Thanks so much again for joining us. Next time we come back, we'll have had a week of full squad workouts. We'll be a few games into the Grapefruit League schedule, and we'll hopefully start having a little bit more clarity about what's going on with this team. With that, I'm Jordan McPherson. He's Andre Fernandez. Thanks so much, everyone, and we'll be back with you guys again next week.
See you guys.